The Local Flavor Live podcast is powered by AudioStack, which provides all the tools you need to host, distribute, and monetize your podcast. Welcome to Local Flavor Live, a podcast about the food and drink scene in Baltimore. I'm your host, Lauren Cohen, and with me today again is the magazine's food and dining editor, Jane Marion.
Hey, Lauren, I haven't seen you all week.
I know. How's your week been?
It's been good, yeah. Except my weekend was a little weird.
What happened?
I lost my car at the Taos Mall.
You were doing shopping, huh?
Just a quick trip in and out, and it did happen once before, I have to confess, about 10 years ago. So I tried to park in the same spot, like on the fourth floor.
Right.
But this is like a public service announcement because our listeners should know that when you lose your car, what you need to do is you go in, you find security, and you ask them to drive you around the mall. And if you know your license plate number, which I did not, I had to phone a friend in the form of my husband. But after driving around for about a half an hour, he asked me about my license plate number, and they can actually locate your exact parking space because
that is amazing.
You know, they redid the mall parking lot about a year ago,
right,
with new color coding and scanners, kind of like the airport.
Mm-hmm.
So when you park into a spot, the light goes from green to red, and I guess it scans your plate.
That is
so yeah.
That's a really good tip. It's a good thing to know.
I was on Delta 5.
D5. I feel like it could happen to anyone. But
yeah, but I worked up an appetite walking.
Oh, so. I bet. Well, that is good to know. Hopefully your week has been on the up and up since then.
Totally.
Okay, good. But yeah, today's going to be a really fun episode. We're going to primarily focus on markets. There's been so much happening with public markets, food halls, farmers markets, you name it. So we're going to roll through our food news, get into that. We're also going to hear from Phil Hahn, who we talked a little bit about last week when we were talking about his concept, Luna's.
Mm-hmm.
But he's actually spearheading two new concepts in the newly renovated Broadway Market in Fells Point.
That's exciting.
Yes, it's really exciting. I got a chance to go in and tour the space and talk with him. So we're going to hear a little bit of that interview on the show today. But I think before we get to that, we'll just roll through food news. Big week as usual. I feel like we're always talking about Mexican food.
I know.
Which is not a bad thing.
No, it's universal.
No, it's not a bad thing at all. It's definitely universal. So a new spot called Echo Fresco. I hope I'm saying that correctly. It's actually a sister spot to the La Tolteca chain.
Oh, yeah, the ones that make their guac table side.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a fun space. But that opened in Hunt Valley. I think it's been open for a couple weeks now, but they did an official grand opening earlier this week. And it seems to me that it's a little more authentic. Like, La Tolteca is a little more Tex-Mex.
Yeah, definitely a little more commercial.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this place seems to be really well-received, and it's open now in Hunt Valley. You know, quesadillas, tacos.
Yeah, Hunt Valley sort of needs a little boost, I think.
I think so. A little diversity. It was so sad when Greetings and Readings closed.
Very,
That was a sad one. I remember, that was a go-to spot in my teen years.
It sounds like a great place to go before or after the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was great. And, you know, speaking of Baltimore County spots, have you heard there's a new development in Towson called Towson Station?
No, where is it?
It's right, York Road, the corner of York and Bosley Avenue, right by the Towson Diner, kind of near Carver. I went to Carver for high school, so I kind of like know that area
really
well.
Yeah.
I used to go to the Towson Diner all the time. But it's Caves Valley Partners that has been spearheading this development, and it's going to be retail and restaurants. It's going to be a lot of fast casual places, so look out for places like Mod Pizza, which is in the Rotunda. Have you ever been there?
Yeah, I know it. I haven't been.
Yeah, it's like build your own pizza, but it kind of tastes like flatbread.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I think they have an option to thicken your crust, but I've had it before. It's pretty good. And then Mission Barbecue. People love Mission Barbecue.
Oh, wow. They sent me a note. They're like all over the country
everywhere.
They've opened like dozens and dozens of spots.
Yeah, it's awesome. And you know, they're a staple, I think, in Maryland now. So it's nice to see that there's going to be yet another location of Mission Barbecue in this new development. There'll be a tropical smoothie cafe, Habit Burger Grill, along with a lot of other retail tenants. So I think they're supposed to break ground on that development this summer.
Yeah, I think Towson really needs it.
It does.
It has so much potential that it hasn't quite reached.
And, right.
You know, when that Barnes & Noble closed, such a bummer. Now it's like parking, like storage. It's a storage space.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, right there at the Circle with like prime real estate. So
it makes me happy that like Towson and I, after Carver, I stuck around and I went to Towson University. So I feel like I know all of these eateries and, you know, there's so many go-tos. I love the Towson Diner. But it makes me happy that students in that area and local residents will now have these like new casual. It's kind of like what I think Foundry Row did for Owings Mills.
Yeah. I think that's a great comparison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I think before all of those fast casual places came out, it was just slim pickings when you just wanted to grab lunch or grab dinner and take it home or whatever.
Yeah, so. And Towson's an interesting mix. You have students, but then you have people like me. I'm there all the time doing yoga.
Yeah.
I love the
bagel.
Losing my car. That's right.
Yes. So,
see, I already forgot.
But I think that that'll be a really great addition. I know we mentioned before we're going to be talking a lot about markets. And, you know, there's big things on the horizons for Baltimore's public markets. So this week specifically, we got big news from Broadway Market, which is in Fells Point. And it opened its first tenant this week. So Vicky's Fells Point Deli opened.
I'm going to go next week.
Isn't it great?
It looks amazing. Yeah. And just the neighborhood's really going to be able to support it,
Absolutely.
I think.
Absolutely, yeah. And Vicky, she's been there since 1983.
Wow.
She was in the old Broadway Market, and I actually ran into her when I was touring the space, and she's so sweet. She was, you know, I think admittedly a little nervous about reopening, which absolutely. She has a smaller space than she used to. But I think that, you know, there were so many regulars that just made her a part of their routine. So.
Yeah, and I think with Sagamore Hotel right there, I've been hearing that they've been, you know, doing a lot of referrals to local businesses, which is really nice, like Sacre Sucre, the wonderful macaron shop, they've been getting a ton of customers. So hopefully they'll feed some people into the market as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Vicky's was the first to open. Really, really soon, Sophia's Place is expected to open, and next week, Sal's Seafood will serve its first ceviches and fish dishes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the old school vendors are going to be the first, and then we'll get to these new vendors, which includes Phil's Old Boy, which is a Korean concept, and Taharka Brothers, and Thai Street, lots of different things. So it's a good mix of old.
Yeah. And great. And are they open for dinner, these places?
Do you know? Well, Vicky's, I think, is breakfast and lunch, but the market is definitely going to be open, you know, all hours. And yeah, so that's exciting news. And also Lexington Market. So last week, the plans were released from Seawall Development about what's going on. Lexington Market there's been so much happening.
It's been years they've been talking about
it. And I think now it's like, it's finally happening. It finally feels real. So Seawall is going to be developing a new market in the parking lot that's just south of the existing market. It's going to be smaller, but I think what'll be cool is that it's going to be two levels. The vendor count is, because the space is a lot smaller, the vendor count's going to be a little less, but I think we're definitely going to expect to see, you know, the Fadley's, the Connie's Chicken and Waffles, the Burger Cookies, as well as a lot of, you know, fresh food and maybe some new vendors as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, everyone knows Fadley's, even out-of-towners.
Yeah.
So that'll definitely be a draw, and hopefully people will discover other places while they're there.
I hope so. I really hope so. It's always such a cool, like, field trip to go and hang out there in the space and try a little bit of everything.
My first time in Baltimore, actually, when we moved here.
Really?
I took the light rail, and I went to Fadley's because I'd heard about it.
Oh, that's awesome.
I loved it. The only thing I don't love standing up and eating, but that's okay. It was so good.
Did you get a crab cake?
Yeah, I got a crab cake.
That's the best.
It was like, welcome to Baltimore to myself.
It's such a good memory, too. Oh, I love that a lot. So there's lots happening for Lexington. And, you know, like I mentioned before, I got a chance to go and visit Broadway Market and sit down with Phil Hahn of Doobies and talk to him about these new concepts. So take a listen to part of my interview with Phil about the future of the project.
So, Phil, I feel like it would be great to start getting a little status update on where the market is now. You know, what's the progress been made? What's the progress that's been made? And, you know, when can we expect to see the new concepts?
Definitely. So this market has been literally a ground up renovation. If you walked into this space 10 months ago, there was no flooring. There was just kind of existing space. They had to do a ton of demolition, just getting a lot of the old school stuff out. I remember walking this space about a year ago with a developer at the time, being like, oh man, this feels weird to be in such a tight space. So really, if you were to do a before and after, it feels drastically different.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to think that beginning tomorrow, that Viggy's will be open, one of the first vendors to open. She represents one of the three vendors coming from the south side. So I know that both her team and her fans of, you know, her loyal fans of the past 30 years have been dying for her to reopen. I think she's been operating out of a food truck in partnership with Cooper's down on Thames, which again is indicative of the neighborhood wanting to support this and also support each other, which I think is really awesome. So that'll be cool when she opens. So technically the door is open for the market while the rest of us are under construction. So it definitely puts a little bit of pressure on us to get open as fast as possible.
Yeah,
to get it going. But you know, it's excitement. Once you have people in here, you start getting more questions. So then it's like that match under your butt to really make this thing happen. And I think, you know, once you see people physically in the space that aren't wearing hard hats and doing construction, it's going to light that fire to make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And so give everyone kind of a brief overview of the concepts that you are spearheading.
Sure.
I know that there's a bar in the works, an Old Boy, which we've heard so much about.
Yep. So actually, we initially got involved with the project because Baltimore City Public Markets was looking for a bar team, a bar operator to really kind of share the same vision that the market had and what we thought of the space being a little bit more family driven, and kind of where I am at my timeline in my personal life. I was like, man, this is great. You know, now that I have a toddler who's a little bit more wild,
yes,
to have a space where you can eat casually, but also know that there's a little bit room for him to run around outside, the ability to bring our dog if we wanted to, I think it's just so cool because I think that you don't have enough of these really large spaces that have just a ton of energy to kind of support that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is very unique in the case that that's what it will do. So that's why I myself and Baltimore City Public Markets, we didn't see this as a liquor license driving another bar that
right.
Fells Point didn't already have. I think Fells already has a very rich and dynamic bar atmosphere and a bar community. And this was supposed to be more of an amenity bar. So if you did want that mimosa or that Bloody Mary, or you know, if you did want to extend your evening and have like a nicer cocktail, you could do that with us. But that was one of the original conversations was, hey, we want our bar to also have an espresso component because we believe that this should be a place that engages activity throughout the day, starting from 8 o'clock in the morning, going all the way to potentially 10, 11 in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what kind of prompted us to do the bar program. And we decided to call that Fat Tiger.
Fat Tiger.
Which is a really just fun name. It has like a little bit of history with the tiger, again, with roots of it being, it was called Hodori, which is a Korean mascot back in the late 80s Olympics that Seoul hosted. And then the tiger, again, being kind of like that Chinese sort of zodiac symbol for me. I just thought it was just like a really neat play. And then as we were thinking about the bar, we knew we wanted to have some type of food component. But in thinking that there'd be so much great food, we thought that it could be a shared kitchen for a unique concept that we've always wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be Old Boy. So Old Boy represents more of our home style Korean concept. And we happen to get so lucky to bring on board Irvin from Hanyo.
That's huge.
Yeah, which
huge.
Is so
That's
huge.
Talented, yeah.
Baltimore doesn't have a massive Korean American community, particularly those that are still in the industry of food service.
Mm-hmm.
So to have him come on board was such a big win for us and really the driving factor behind allowing us to move forward with Old Boy. If we felt like we didn't have quite the right team, we would have kind of pivoted and done something
sure,
else. But
yeah.
I think having Urban involved in the, you know, what he did at Hanyo was a good indicator that this was, you know, like the stars were aligned.
Yes.
So with that menu, again, to be a little bit more home style, but making the food approachable, but still having a small section of the menu that allows it to be slightly progressive so that, you know, should our moms come visit us, you know, mm-hmm. we feel like we're showing them something that they couldn't have thought of with regards to how homestyle cooking could be in Korean cuisine.
Right.
So it'll be fun. It'll be cool to get judged by our moms, but certainly to also showcase something that we've been thinking of as well.
Yeah, I love how there's that connection back to your childhood. So are there any dishes specifically that you think will kind of harken back to that?
Oh man, it could be so many. And I think that's the nature of the small plates menu, as well as having some main entrees. I mean, everything should be a flavor that just brings you back to your youth, but also the types of food that our moms would make, whatever the reason was. And I think that any one of those dishes can certainly still have that sense of nostalgia. Mm-hmm. But I think in terms of, you know, how we source food, how the food is plated, how it's presented, everything's gonna feel a little bit more kind of more modernized. And I think that that's a really nice balance to have with what we're doing at Old Boy.
Yeah, yeah, and I love how the stalls are right across from each other. You guys are sharing a kitchen, so they'll have that kind of direct link.
For sure.
And, you know, the rest of the stalls in the market are so impressive. They really pull from so many different cuisines. And I know that you consulted, you know, and you kind of had a hand in helping to curate the lineup. So tell me a little bit about that and what you ultimately wanted, you know, as this lineup grew.
Sure. So I think all of that was made possible because Baltimore City Public Markets was so open about it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was an open call. Anyone could have submitted an application to be considered. But, you know, did we get a little bit more involved to kind of call some of our friends to say, hey, there's a really cool project. We're going pretty all in on this one. We think it'd be awesome if we got to work right alongside you. And I think, again, the Baltimore food scene progressing as far as it has allowed smaller operators to get involved with this project because, again, it being a food hall, having a little bit more approachable of the capital startup costs. I think, you know, there are a lot of articles that say food halls are the next food truck mm-hmm. in terms of accessibility and getting, you know, speed to market in terms of getting your product introduced. We had a really cool opportunity to just present a handful of teams to Baltimore City Public Markets, but everyone still went through the fair progress process of being vetted. Mm-hmm. They've had interviews with different parts of the team, and I think in some regards, some did food tastings as well to see how everyone would fit into the whole market. And we were fortunate enough to see at least 2-3 of them come into the market with us.
That's great.
So that's really cool. So you see Taharker Brothers, Veranda, as well as Thai Street. Mm-hmm. And these are all really great foods. I mean, I have Taharker Brothers in my freezer right now. And, you know, when we're in market season, you know, we're getting pad thai from John at Thai mm-hmm. Street on the weekends. And then we see Veranda at the Thursday Farmers Market with us by the Transamerica Tower. So these are all like just really cool food teams that we're thrilled to be alongside them.
Yeah, and it's that great mix of old and new. You have all of those vendors you just mentioned.
Sure.
Sophia's Place and Vicky's Falls Point Deli and Sal Seafood. So it really does kind of make for this great food experience.
Oh, I totally think so. Yeah, for sure.
So that's great. And so, you know, I also wanted to ask you about public markets in general. Obviously, we're seeing Broadway coming to fruition, and we have all the work going on at Cross Street and Lexington Market. So what do these public markets bring to Baltimore City and bring to the food scene at large?
Sure. I think, you know, for any public Baltimore City facility, I think the goal is be a value add for the community. Whether it's a library or any institution, I think that that's what helps bring people together and getting access to something. The food hall or food markets in particular, again, you know, ideally bring access to food a little bit more conveniently to the neighborhoods that they operate in. Mm-hmm. But you could just see the level of activity and foot traffic at Lexington Market. I mean, it has real purpose to be there. I mean, you could see it being this community center really for that neighborhood and being that, again, of what Broadway could be for Fells Point is just so cool. You know, we talked about just the number of seats here. I think you have 100 plus seats
yes.
here. And
yes.
I think to be able to offer that at a non-committal price point where you could come sit down and have like a $2 cup of coffee or go all the way up to having, you know, $30 to $40 worth of food. But again, the fact that it's so casual and come as you go type of vibe. It's just really nice and approachable for a community.
Yeah. Beautiful patio out front.
Exactly. Such an inviting patio.
Yeah.
Just tons of outdoor space. The fact that, you know, literally the sides of the walls are lined with all these doors just creates a sense of, hey, we're open. We're here for you. And I think that this kind of acts as a catalyst to see more development up and down this Broadway corridor.
Phil is so knowledgeable about the food scene, and he is so passionate about these new concepts. And I think what's really cool about what he was just describing is that while, you know, we love these brand new shiny food halls and we love, you know, these modern concepts that we can activate every day, it's really great to see the blending of the old and the new, which is definitely a priority here, it sounds like. I mean, we were just looking it up. Broadway Market opened in 1786.
1786! The country was 10 years old.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
The country was 10 years old.
It wasn't even
Broadway Market opened.
We were a colony back then.
That's
really?
Right. But it's so historic, and I think that that's so important. And, you know, going and walking the space and seeing how the architects have preserved, like, the archways and the windows and, you know, but on the inside, it's all of these brand new, diverse stalls that bring, you know, so many different tastes and flavors.
Oh, this is really going to be exciting.
Yeah.
You know, I'm from Philly, so we have the Reading Terminal, which is similar.
Yes. Yeah. Tell me all about that. I know.
You know what? I haven't been in years, honestly, but I used to love to go there as a kid. My biggest memory is just seeing like a whole pig in
really?
The charcuterie.
Did it scare you?
Yeah, it scared me.
I think as a kid, like when I saw, even when I went to like the grocery store with my parents, when I saw like the chickens and things like that.
Yeah, and they had they had fish and tanks. And it probably was the first time I became aware of sourcing.
Interesting.
You know? Yeah.
Okay.
When I think about that now. And they also had like great Amish baked goods. Yeah, and a famous cheesesteak place.
Yeah, but you haven't been in a while.
No, okay. Every time I go to Philly, I say to myself, I have to go.
Yeah, but that's such a great memory, and I think that that's so special about Broadway Market, blending that old and new, and really making it an amenity that the neighborhood can enjoy. You know, and I think that something else that's really interesting as we talk about these markets that are getting redeveloped, number one, how great it is that the city is putting the attention into preserving these community spaces. But also, I think it's interesting, you know, this whole idea of a public market versus a food hall, which is something, you know, in interviews about Our House and Whitehall Mill and Mount Vernon Marketplace, people are quick to point out. So, you know, I think that actually John Constable, who is the architect from Seawall Development, who's doing Lexington Market, they actually had a hearing before the Baltimore City Urban Design and Architecture Advisory Panel.
Wow.
I'm
impressed.
They had that last week, and he was he spoke so eloquently about the differences and why they made that, you know, such a priority in their research. He was saying, you know, a public market has a lot to do with access to fresh food and being able to go in and get produce and meats. He also said that they are generally larger than a food hall. You know, so Seawall, just for context, is also the firm that developed Our House. So they were able to kind of, you know, compare and contrast the two really well. So they're generally larger. They focus on access to food, like I said. There's a wider range of price points, which I think is interesting. In a public market.
Yeah.
You know, so it serves many different people from all backgrounds and walks of life. And I think, you know, he was mentioning more communal seating to make it feel like more of a community hub.
Yeah, I guess I think of the public markets as almost like the supermarket for the city.
Absolutely.
You know, I know when Safeway opened in Canton a bunch of years ago, it was like a big deal.
Yeah.
Another editor here, Janelle Ehrlichman Diamond, I just remember her. She had like a Facebook post about getting a Safeway.
Right.
Like, you know, it was such a big deal. I don't know how many supermarkets there are in the city. Certainly there weren't back in the day. So these places really serve that purpose.
Absolutely. And, you know, when we're talking about equity, I think it gets into issues about food deserts and, you know, making sure that everyone in every pocket of the city has access to this fresh food. So I think that that's such a huge component of the public market versus the food hall. When I think of food halls, I think of the Mount Vernon Marketplaces and the Our Houses.
I mean, the first time I went to a food hall, it felt a little food court-y to me.
Yes, exactly, like the mall, right.
But, you know, when they're done well, and we have some that are done really well, I'm still a fan of Belvedere Square.
That's awesome.
It just feels a little bit different than some of the others. But, you know, I just think that, that, but food halls are definitely, you know, still trending.
Absolutely,
I'd say.
Yeah, and they're so accessible. I feel like it's such an amenity to be able to go with a group and everybody can kind of eat what they want.
Yeah,
and you have that with a public market as well. But I think the two definitely serve different purposes. And you know, also we can't forget about Cross Street Market.
Oh no,
that's an exciting one too.
Yeah,
that's been in development for a while.
Yeah, what's going on there?
So Cross Street is, fingers crossed, they're slating the grand opening.
No pun.
Yeah, exactly. No pun intended. They're slating the grand opening of the first wave of stalls for April. So, you know, we can hope to get in there and really get a look of all the development that's happened there. So some of the older vendors that are going to be returning include Fenwick's Choice Meats, The Sweet Shop, and Steve's Lunch. So these are places that stuck around after the first market closed, and they'll be returning. I'm sure there are so many Federal Hill locals that miss, you know, going to them every day.
Absolutely.
And I think Fenwick's kind of, you know, goes along with that public market feel, being able to go in, buy your meat, like we were just talking about.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I mean, it's sort of like everything old is new again. Mm-hmm. You know, in Europe, before refrigeration in other countries, you know, there wouldn't be just a place, like a supermarket where you would go and then you would, you know, or a Costco where you would buy like 10 pounds of chicken and shove it in your fridge or freezer for the month. So I think that people are becoming a little more just savvy about supporting these local vendors. Mm-hmm. The product tends to be, I think, higher quality and fresher, and the prices are, you know, more fair. And you also feel good when you're buying directly
from the little guy. Mm-hmm. That's such a great point. I know I definitely do. So, and the other great thing about Cross Street that I think is going to be awesome, especially we have the warmer temperatures coming in, they're going to have their own farmer's market.
So on the weekends?
On the weekends. So it's starting on May 4th. And so it's going to be outside, kind of like in that Cross Street area. And a bunch of vendors are going to be there. And I just think it's so cool thinking about that. We also have all of these other farmers markets that are returning.
Yeah, you know, I think we forget we're an agricultural state.
Yes.
And so much can grow here. I've interviewed many farmers. I have a friend who is kind of has a gentleman's farm. He grows the tomatoes for a number of area restaurants. And he even had figs growing. He has
figs,
trees.
That's
which
amazing.
I could not believe. He lives in Moncton. He says the quality of the soil is really high there, but there's very, very little you can't grow here.
Yeah, that's awesome. So many different, and also, you know, CSAs are starting for the season. So have you ever done a CSA?
I was about to say, I did through my friend, actually, has a CSA, Karma Farms.
Yes.
And he grows beautiful things, but I don't know. I felt like it was a lot of work to figure out what to do with the kale, and there was so much of it. And I think I would actually do better with it now. I've changed the way I've cooked lately. I've become much more of a seasonal cook. So I don't have something in mind when I go food shopping. I just see what's fresh, and I, you know.
That's such a good approach.
And, you know, it's definitely the way restaurants are going, and then I can figure out what I'm going to do with it. But kale in particular stumped me, especially, like, so many pounds of it.
Yeah.
And then, so I stopped doing it. But I'm thinking about doing it again.
Yeah, I was thinking about it this year too. It's one of those things where I'm always like, I really should, but you know,
totally.
You just don't. And there's so many options. We actually have a CSA guide on our website if anybody wants to check it out. But so many local farms, and even, you know, like Liberty Delight does a meat share program, which I think is really cool.
And One Straw has been doing it. I think they're the oldest in the state.
Yes.
They've been doing it. I remember, you know, I didn't even know what it stood for when I first heard about them. I had to go look it up.
Oh, yeah. Community-supported agriculture.
Impressive,
Lauren. If anybody's wondering, that's something we definitely should have covered. But
you know, when you go to the supermarket, not to put down supermarkets because they certainly have their place when you need a bottle of Heinz ketchup. But, you know, when you're buying a head of romaine lettuce, it's probably been sitting on the shelves for a couple of weeks.
Yes.
And you can just taste the difference. When you go to a farmer's market, it's, you know, you can tell because the vegetables tend to be dirtier, which is a good sign. They come from the ground.
Right.
And, you know, in fact, I think the first time I took my kids to one of the farmer's markets and they saw, you know, the roots of the carrots, and they were shocked. They, you know, are used to those little pre-cut things that you put in their lunchbox.
Yes.
So
It's such a great opportunity. And, you know, along with the CSAs, we also have the farmers markets returning, everything from the Baltimore Farmers Market under the JFX, There's one at the Rotunda, Kenilworth, Catonsville, Fells Point, everywhere. So if you want to learn more about those farmers markets, you can check out bmag.co/farmersmarkets. It's our farmers market guide that gives you everything you need to know about vendors and dates and things like that.
Yeah, and I know some of the websites, they have recipes for what you can do with their vegetables. That's, I know One Straw has that.
Yeah, that's such a great way to go about it if you, you know, look ahead and get a recipe and then go to the farmer's market and gather everything you need.
And, you know, I used to feel like it wasn't one-stop shopping, that you would do the farmer's market, but then you would have to maybe go to, you know, to your local market.
Right.
But I don't think that's true anymore.
Yeah,
and they sell
the whole
everything.
Point. Right.
Even flowers, if you're having a party. Wildflowers.
It's beautiful. And like we were saying before, it just makes you feel so much better to know that you picked everything up and you shopped locally. And
Just bring your market bags.
Yeah.
That's
essential.
And sometimes you have to go really early.
Yeah.
You know, they run out of things. Or if you want to buy, like, I love the empanadas at the Curry Shack.
So good.
At Waverly. And they, you know, they sell out. I mean, if you're not there by like probably 11 o'clock, they're out of
them. They're gone. Get them before they're gone. But yes, it's so exciting, you know, that season is coming back. So it's been so great chatting markets. And, you know, as we do at the end of every show, I think we should go over our best bites of the week. I had really good pizza this week. I love Home Slice.
My favorite food is pizza.
I know.
Except for, I think I have also said my favorite food is sushi, but
it's so hard to choose.
How is it?
But Home Slice is awesome. I think it's great because they're literally in every neighborhood. There's one in Fed Hill. There's one in Canton. There's one in Mount Vernon. I think they even expanded to D.C. not too long ago, which is
thick crust, thin.
So it's, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely not thin, but it's not like, you know, like deep dishes.
You know, I'm going to Italy soon, so
yes.
I'll be able to judge pizza after that.
Oh my gosh,
I'll be intolerable.
The best time. But yes, Home Slice is great, and they also have these fries with this like yummy, it's like they call it yummy sauce. It's like a zesty, spicy dipping sauce. It's really good.
What'd you get on your pizza?
We got mushrooms and green pepper and onion, which the onion I could have done without. But the green pepper and the mushrooms I was all about.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it was great. And they also, so we just did the regular pie, but they also have these, they're like boat shaped. Like oval shaped. I think it's Turkish. I think the owner took it from like a Turkish.
Really?
Yeah, it's called, I have to think of the word, pide? Something
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. But it's kind of like a Turkish spin. And then so it's like a boat shape and they cut it in triangles. So it's cool. It's like a cool experience that you can get at Home Slice. But what about you?
Well, I did some fine dining over the weekend.
Nice.
We met some Bethesda friends at Ananda in Fulton.
So beautiful.
Just south of Columbia.
So beautiful.
And there's just nothing quite like it. I love Indian food. The food is phenomenal. I had fish curry, which I've actually never had. It was black cod in this wonderful spicy curry sauce. But the service is just, I think, some of the best anywhere.
It is.
Our server was just so lovely and but without hovering and just so genuine and made great recommendations. And it's just, you feel like you're with family when you're eating there, I would say.
Totally.
And Binda Singh, the owner came over to, you know, say hello, but he says hello to every table. He knows me, but he exudes charm and warmth, and it comes through in the food. There's so much love there. The sister cooks in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And then for dessert, we had a creme brulee with cardamom, which was just excellent.
That sounds amazing.
It was creme brulee, but with just a little bit of spice. Yeah.
And one of those things about creme brulee is, like, if you want it, you want it, like, and you want it to
totally.
Be good.
Totally.
Yeah.
We split it among four. We probably could have used two.
Oh, my gosh. So good. Yeah, I think that's such a special place. It's funny. I was just talking to a friend who actually grew up in the Columbia area about Ananda. It came up, and I was like, have you been? It's so good. And she goes, yeah, Binda. And I was like, you know Binda, too? You know, it's just he treats – you're right. He treats everyone – like family and
yeah,
he
he's
really
a dad
about.
Now. So his son Benji is, I'm not sure how old, like, you know, less than two, but he and his wife made a trip, the first trip, baby's first trip to India.
Oh, that's special.
Yeah,
that's
and he said he was so spoiled because Binda's whole family is there.
Oh,
you know, he said he didn't want to leave.
That's so sweet. But yeah, shout out to Ananda. It's so great, such a great experience that really sticks with you. But yeah, this was so fun talking about markets.
I'm ready to get my market on.
Yes, me too.
Sign of spring.
Yes, definitely. Looking forward to the warmer temperatures ahead. So thank you so much for for listening. As always, you can pick up a copy of our April issue, which is now on stands. It's our Best Places to Live issue, and we also have a primer on marijuana. So lots of great things in our April issue. It's on newsstands now, and you can check out our food coverage every day at baltimoremagazine.com.
Local Flavor Live podcast is powered by AudioStack, which provides all the tools you need to host, distribute, and monetize your podcast.